As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey folks, welcome into Onto Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma, Patrick Mooney on the road, seeing the sights, seeing the world. He'll be in Washington this week for Cubs-Nats Redux. They played last week. It feels a million years ago, right? That was the first half of last week that they played the Nationals at Wrigley. Sahadev and I were just talking before we started recording, like, you know, what we're going to get into in this episode. And it is wild how, if for those of you who listen, you know, are devoted listeners and hang on every word, which of course is all of you, you'll note that it was not until the last 1 minute of the last episode that Mooney remembered, oh yeah, we haven't talked about Jason Hayward. I mean, talk about huge news that ended up just getting scuttled a bit by virtue of, you know, we had recorded earlier in the day that day, and then the Field of Dreams game happened, and we didn't record until Friday because of the game, and just kind of threw everything off kilter. And the guys that we still want to talk about, there's a lot that has spilled over. Unfortunately, some of them gave us hooks this weekend to talk about today, but one of those things I just want to mention right at the top is Franmil Reyes. The Cubs added, I believe, that same day, earlier in the day, that the Hayward news came out. And so that, too, was something that we hadn't specifically discussed in the last episode, but that merits, I think, especially in a season like this, player like that. You know, if the Yankees added Reyes, we're not having, you know, a huge chunk of a podcast dedicated to it. But the Cubs situation is such that that's a pretty significant move. That's about as big as a waiver claim can get. And I think it merits some discussion as to why the Cubs did it, maybe even a hint on why the Guardians did it, why the Cubs did it, what it means for the future, and what we're looking for over the last month and a half for any of it to mean anything. So I guess let's just start there. Reyes hit his first home run this weekend with the Cubs, and this is not to be taken literally, but basically, every game he's played with the Cubs so far, five maybe, he has had the hardest hit ball in the game for the Cubs. I've tried to check each game, exit velocity. I'm pretty sure he's been at the top every single game. So, you know, you're getting a taste of what he is and what he does. What's up with Reyes? What did the Cubs get there? What are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who I was actually surprised to see how good he's been his entire career. I mean, he's young still. Did he just turn 27 or he just turned 28? So he's still young. He's put up 30 home runs, 30 plus home runs twice. He's always hit for power in the big leagues. He's with now he's with two coaches that he has a history with, and Johnny Washington and Andy Green. I think there was something to what Andy Green said that I think is legit, where, you know, the whole like, a fresh start type thing can sound cliche, but in this instance, this was a guy who got off to a really rough start and was essentially like looking over his shoulder constantly once that rough start happened, and it kind of mounted. And he's there's so much pressure on him to get back, because that he's on a team that is competing for the playoffs and really needs that power and really needs him to turn it around. And I think he just dug himself into such a hole that it was a combo of developing some bad physical habits, some probably mentally pushing himself too hard, all those things that happen to baseball players.
He had a hamstring injury mixed in there too, right smack in the middle. He missed about 3 weeks with a hamstring injury.
So I totally missed the injury part too. So, I mean, he was dealing with something. I'm sure, you know, there's so many little factors there, and he never found his rhythm. I mean, it's a smart pickup by the Cubs. It's one of those things where, you know, fans like to get frustrated by the lack of big spending, and it's absolutely valid to do that. But this is one of those moments where I'm guessing a lot of teams passed because they're like, we're not paying that $1.5 million or whatever is owed the rest of the year. Or was it $1.5 million, $2.5 million, whatever it was around there, the rest of the season.
To add to that point, I think because I think the question in these situations, when it's a waiver situation, it means by default, some team has this player and says, we don't want him anymore. So like, how excited can you get if you're the team or the fan base picking this guy up? And the reason it's a bit of a unique situation is for the Guardians, who are trying to balance always, not spending a lot but still competing, they're looking to the rest of this year and they're like, you know, Reyes is not going to play a lot for us because we don't have time to give him the runway to bounce back. We need our outfielders, DH, to be hitting right now because we're barely hanging in this race. So that's a factor. They know that if they put him on waivers, good chance he does get claimed, and they save that just shy of $2 million this year. And that's a lot to them. That is a lot. And then moreover, if they know there's a decent chance they were not going to tender him in the offseason, he's arbitration eligible again. He's going to get a raise into the $6-plus million range, I think. The Guardians aren't going to keep him. They weren't going to keep him at that price level. So for them, it's a pretty easy decision to move him on. And for the Cubs, it's a smart decision to, you know, take that 5, 10, whatever percent chance that he does bounce back and you do want to tender him, and then you get him for next year at $6-7 million and you're very happy with that. And all it costs you in the interim is $1.5 to $2 million. And that's something the Cubs should be doing. So to that's just to put a point on the financial aspect of this, of why it made sense for the Guardians to do it, why it is still a plus for the Cubs to do it.
Yeah, and I mean, they ideally, you know, in a perfect world, he'd be a lefty slugger, right? And this would be the perfect
could play a position.
Yeah, and it would be like if he could play first and hit from the left side, it would be the perfect addition for the Cubs, right? But he also probably wouldn't be available. there's no doubt that they could use more slug. They get on base. I mean, Jed made this point, and I've kind of been saying it all season long. They get on base. This is a team that gets on base at a decent clip. I believe they're top 10 and have been hovering around there for most of the season, if not a little bit better at times, depending on what type of streak they're on or stretch they are on performance wise on offense. If they could add that slug, I think it changes them from like a bottom 10 offensive team as far as run production to, you know, pushing top 10, you know, borderline top 10 scoring team. And they just need more power. There's no doubt about it. I think one storyline that kind of goes unnoticed is just how much the power has dropped with Ian Happ. As good as he's been this year, he's an average power producer, and that's just not who Ian Happ has been. So you, and Ross was asked this, and I think it's a kind of a fair question. It's like, do you almost want him to go back to who he was? It's like, well, you don't want Ian Happ to go back to who he was because he was so inconsistent. But if he could be consistent with power production, maybe that would be more valuable. But I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking things a bit there. But the power drop with him is something that I think is curious, and we need to watch going forward. And just his performance in general, obviously, will be really interesting in 2023 to see what these first four, what are we at, 4.5 months now? 4.5 months of baseball, like just how real it was and what it means going forward. But Franmil is just, if he can kind of solidify himself and they tender him this offseason, that's a nice pickup for them for not much money, and just adds that power bat, adds a clubhouse presence that's positive, and you know, a guy that you know, sounds like he instantly gets along with his teammates and brings a nice vibe to the clubhouse. And you know, vibes don't equal wins, but they're always nice to have. So I think it'll be interesting to see how he does going forward and what it can mean for the team in the offseason, because power is going to be something they're still going to look for, whether Reyes, you know, performs or not. But it kind of checks a box in a way, and it allows them to maybe do some different things and move some pieces around if need be. You know, if they want to be aggressive in different ways, I think, you know, having Reyes there. I mean, it's interesting because when I talk to people with the Cubs, a lot of what they say is, you know, midway through the season, there was talk of, you know, Patrick Wisdom has impressed us. You know, like, Patrick Wisdom looks like he's a keeper. He's someone that can be a part of this team. But right now he's hitting like fourth or fifth, and you want him to hit sixth or seventh. And they've started to do that now that they've added Reyes, right? Reyes, I think, is someone that they believe can be a middle of the order hitter on a winning team. I mean, he has been. Right. So I think that they'd like to see if that works, and it lengthens the lineup, as they say. You know, if you keep Wisdom and you have Reyes there and you add another interesting bat and even find a lefty, I mean, it just makes things a lot more flexible and allows them to get creative with some moves if they want to in the offseason.
A parting thought on Reyes, and then I want to say something on Wisdom, is with respect to Reyes. I read an interesting piece at Fangraphs from Dan Szymborski about the dejuiced, the more universally dejuiced baseballs this year and the universally implemented humidors. Reyes, apparently, the quality of his contact historically has been such that it was right in the sweet spot for where the reduction in distance on batted balls hurts the most. And I'm not saying this cuts. It doesn't completely explain his drop in production with the Guardians, which if it did, that would almost make you concerned, because it might be a suggestion that he just can't survive in the new environment. I don't think it's that. It is more of just a interesting note that for his, you know, a ball that he hit, I'm being glib about what the article was. You should read it, find it, read it. It's on Reyes specifically. But the gist that I took away was he might hit the ball exactly the same way this year as he would hit it last year, and it travels 30 fewer feet. And for him, that means a whole lot less dingers. And because that was sort of right his sweet spot. And
that's where all his value comes. Right.
Yeah. And one thing I haven't yet, again, because of these 2 weeks have been crazy, which is weird, man. After the trade deadline in August, I did not expect it to be very busy in the Cubs.
Yes.
Like that I couldn't dig into stuff. But one thing I wanted to see was Cleveland a location that didn't previously have a humidor and was one of the 15 that added it this year? I wanted to check on that. Or maybe a disproportionate volume of AL Central ballparks did. Haven't checked. And then the second thing is Wrigley Field plays so uniquely for different types of hitters that are alley to alley hitters. I wanted to see if he's an alley to alley guy, because then you might suspect some of those home runs could come back, because that's sort of the right distance. If you're an alley to alley guy at Wrigley Field, that plays very well. Or home run to alley to alley home run hitter plays very well. So anyway, those are, I guess there's your tee up, listener. Shoot me a tweet. You want to look into that stuff for me? You want to do my job for me? Send me a tweet if you find the info about Cleveland and about how Reyes's power plays at Wrigley. I'm going to dig into it this week if you don't beat me to it. So anyway, the comment I wanted to make on wisdom, I actually appreciated that transition very much, Sahadev, because that's another thing that happened these last week and a half that hasn't had a chance to be discussed much. And that is, wisdom is the Cubs' first baseman now. It's like, hello, that's a pretty significant change. We would have anticipated it coming. I think we either did or would have discussed it pre-deadline as something the Cubs are going to need to find out information about before the offseason, because some of the bat additions that they can make might implicate third base. You know, if the Cubs go out and add Xander Bogaerts, for example, he might be the shortstop, or they might leave Nico Hoerner at short at that point and move and sort of try to persuade a guy like Bogaerts, hey, you're actually most impactful at third base. It's delicate because a lot of these guys are seeking to get paid as top tier shortstops and whatever. Cross that bridge when you get to it. Point is, it has the potential to impact Patrick Wisdom, and you'd want to know, okay, how does he play at first base? You know, is he slightly above average defensively there, and then okay, and the bat sort of stabilized this year in that 115 weighted runs created plus range. Maybe we live with that as internally at first base, depending on what else we can do, and maybe it gives a little more time to evaluate Matt Mervis at first base or at AAA. You know, I like the idea. I like the idea very much of seeing what it looks like to have him at first base almost on a daily basis the rest of the way. Now, the Cubs are doing it in part because they want to give some of that third base time to Zach McKinstry, and with Nick Madrigal back, it's like, where else, you know, where are you going to play him? So I get it. And now with TH occupied by Reyes, again, this is sort of how it has to be, but maybe for me it's just a happy byproduct, because I did want to see Wisdom at first base and to know for sure, okay, cool, he can handle that just fine. Put that in the back of your mind and proceed into the offseason knowing not that you have first base locked down, but that you have options in-house.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's part of what I was saying, is it gives them options to be creative. That how do they want to proceed? It will be interesting, right? I think they're going to take as much information as they can over the next month and a half, right? They won't ignore what happens over the next month and a half. So I can't just say that this is what they should do or what I think they'll do, because I think there's going to be a lot of information that comes that will heavily influence how they act. Because if Reyes is a keeper, right, you'd like to have that lefty bat, power bat at first base, right? So does that mean moving Wisdom? And again, I haven't heard anything like this. This is just, I'm trying to figure out what type of moves they could make, right? They seem to like McKinstry, or at least be curious about what value he can provide. And obviously he's under control for a while. He's not going to be expensive. He can play all over the place. He's a lefty bat. They didn't have like a lefty bat infielder, right? So that's really helpful for them to, outside of Rivas, I'm saying someone that can play beyond first base. They just haven't had that this season or a little while, really.
Jonathan Villar was that guy.
He was supposed to be that guy, and he never performed, right? He didn't perform, and the defense he couldn't play on the left side. So McKinstry looks like, I'd like to see more of McKinstry, but he looks solid defensively. If he can be that Joey Wendell type. I know the Cubs were interested in Joey Wendell before he was traded to Miami. He went from Miami. Tampa Bay to Miami. Am I remembering that?
You got me curious now. While you talk, throw it to me. Because that immediately made me curious how he's done this year.
Yeah, I think round league average, I believe, maybe a little bit better offensively. But he's great defensively. And I think McKinstry probably doesn't. I think Wendell probably has a little bit more power. I'm not 100% sure on that, but McKinstry just, you know, looks right. Like he can hit for average.
Yeah. I'm going to jump in.
Yeah.
Sorry. You can keep going on McKinstry, but I got to lay it out, because that was quite a pull by you, because Wendell also was a guy who did not get a real foothold in the big leagues until much later. He was already 27. And he had always succeeded in the upper levels of the minors. Very good defensively all over. Not a ton of power, but didn't strike out, didn't walk a lot, just kind of a good hitter, which is a lot of what McKinstry does. And he has now, though, leveled off. He's 32 now, and he is slightly below average this year overall with the Marlins, but still playing all over, good defensively. You know, a solid player to have, but, you know, not alone, not a difference maker.
Is he,
but a guy,
does he hit
that,
from the left side, or is he switch?
He's just a lefty.
Lefty, okay.
So anyway, that's, you'd love to, if McKinstry could be that, you know, I don't want, what the reason I'm interjecting too is I don't want listeners to get the idea that Sahadev is saying, in conjunction with the point about needing lefty power bats, that like, oh, well, and they've got McKinstry, he could be that middle of the order lefty. And that's not what he's saying. He's just saying it's good player to have to coordinate all the rest of this stuff. He's almost like the lefty version of Chris Morel, if you want to compare. Like, those are the guys who could play off of each other, depending on, you know, that day's setup.
Right. And, I mean, I think Ross believes there's a little more power in there. McKinstry kind of, I haven't seen it with him, and McKinstry essentially told me that he's like, if I run into one, he's like, I'll have a big smile on my face and be hustling around the bases, but that's not really how he views his game. Ultimately, I'm just curious now, with Wisdom playing first, what is the end game here? What's the plan for the corner infield spots over the winter? I think it'll be really interesting because you have these righty power guys in Wisdom and Reyes who maybe aren't exactly similar, but, you know, they have some similarities in their offensive style. Wisdom obviously has more defensive value, but Reyes is younger and has more of a track record. Wisdom is also, I don't think, ARB eligible for another year or two, so he's cheaper. But there's all sorts of different things here. I'm just curious, like, what can you get for Wisdom? Can you parlay that into like a prospect that, and then replenish prospect depth in order to trade for a left-handed hitting first baseman, a guy that I keep looking at. Again, this is me thinking forward and not really having any, nobody with the Cubs has talked about this with me. But I do wonder if the Rays are ready to move on from someone like G-Man Choi. He's about to be ARB eligible. He's strictly a platoon guy, right? But strong side of a platoon. Is that a guy that makes sense for the Cubs to go after in the offseason? I'm just trying to think. We've talked so much about it. Shortstop, I think both you and I agree that's the spot to spend a lot
Can
of money on.
Can I say
on,
it
right?
again? Since we're going yeah. there, I have to say it every time because there will be people
Go
yelling.
Get him.
We're not saying that Nico Hoerner hasn't been successful. We're not saying like, oh, we're looking at the roster and saying, my God, this team needs a shortstop. It's that's where the impact players are predominantly available this year that can be coordinated with what the Cubs already have to improve the overall roster significantly. And it's not a criticism of Nico Hoerner to say he has the flexibility to be very, very good defensively at second base, or he probably could handle third base if you needed it. It is not, and we know he could handle the outfield if needed. Like, we're not that far removed, recall, from feeling like Horner's best value to the Cubs was as a guy who moved around. Like, that has tremendous value. You don't have to lock him into shortstop and say, sorry, not interested in Carlos Correa because we got Nico Hoerner. I'm trying to be kind about it, but it's like every time I mention one of the shortstops, my ats just get full of people who are like, don't need it, have Nico. Why do you hate Nico? What's wrong with Nico? I'm like, no, I love Nico. Nico's been so good this year that it makes me even more want these guys because I'm like, see how good the Cubs can be in 2023?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't.
That's going to be my new point. I just nailed it. I love when the podcast becomes a workshop for points. I'm going to use that one. I'm going to say it's because Nico was so good that it makes me even more want to add to the team for 2023. Boom. Yes.
Well, and it's
foisted on their own petard.
I just think it makes so much sense in this way. You look at a guy like Justin Steele or even Keegan Thompson or any of these pitchers, all of them, Marcus Stroman, even the veterans, you create an elite defense behind them. It's multiple more wins, even this season. They win more games with an elite infield defense. The defense has been much better lately. It's been helping them win. There's a couple things going on here. They benefit greatly from the way they position guys, right? They used to be able to – they didn't shift as much with Javi because he was just insane and he had this insane range and all this ability that they could get really creative. And now they've shifted a bit more, and it's happening in a way that the result of that is Nico looks great, and he's legitimately a very good player all around, defensively, offensively, everything. I don't think he's at the same level as someone like Carlos Correa or Trey Turner. I don't think so. I think the arm is a step below. It's not. I was wondering if the arm would be an issue. It's not an issue. I just don't think it's like plus, right? And that's not the case with Turner or Correa. So if you get one of those guys, what you're doing is you're creating a shortstop second base combo that is the best in baseball. I mean, you're going to be hard pressed to find a better shortstop second base combination. Then in 2024, what you have is Pedro Armstrong in center field, and you have the best up the middle defense in baseball. There's just not going to be a team that can compete with that. I know, you know, whatever Pedro Armstrong turns into offensively, he's going to be an elite center field defender. I feel like once a week we're seeing these crazy plays that he makes. The other day there was a ball that I was like, oh, the left fielder is going to make a play on that because that's who was closer. And it was the center, and it was Pedro Armstrong coming out of nowhere making an amazing catch. And he does this regularly, these insane catches in center field that I don't think we've seen since Kenny Lofton with the Cubs, a defender like that.
Yeah, the difference with like Albert Almora, because that's the comp people immediately think of, and hopefully PCA has done enough at the plate this year to indicate they're not the same type of hitter. So right. I wish you could wash that away. Defensively, Almora was fantastic in the minor leagues. He was great at the ball. You know, he would close well and make the catch and make the play, good reads, but he didn't have great speed. In fact, sometimes he looked like below average speed. PCA is very fast, and the reads off the bat are just slightly faster. Now, Almora was very good at it. PCA seems absurd at it. Some of these catches that Sadev is talking about that look impossible off the bat, they look impossible, but he finds the spot immediately, and he is sprinting balls out right to that spot. It's really, I mean, he's lived up to the hype.
Yeah, someone who used to be in Cubs amateur scouting told me that a lesson they learned with Almora is that it's hard to be considered an elite defender if you don't have plus speed. Elite defender in center field, sorry. It's hard, like they've now kind of shifted the way they look at it that, yeah, is he a very good defender? Yes. Is he an elite defender in center field? Probably not. He's a step below. Like he never got to that elite level, and it was because the speed wasn't plus. And I think that really held him back. In the obviously, I mean, if he hit for any value, you live with the average defense in center field, but is the offense, obviously, that's a whole nother story. The offense never came around. But I, my point
the,
is...
Did you see his comments when the Cubs and Reds played?
A few weeks ago, yes.
I am not dancing on anybody's anything. It is notable. I actually think there was a little bit in his comments that was fair. He did have a lot of different developmental approaches. At the same time, there was some stuff in his comments that was like, but where it was just like, but dude, your game wasn't going to work. Like the reason they were trying to work with you to change things was because it wasn't going to work. And then he's like, and so finally I can be myself with the Reds. And it's like, well, you're not hitting, dude. I mean, just saying.
He is what he is, right? He relies on BABIP and he's not this type of games player, right? This game that we play in now, you need hard contact. You need the ball in the air. He doesn't neither, right? He relies on if he had that plus speed, then his game may work a little bit better, right? He can put the ball on the ground and just book it to first and live by BABIP. But I mean, his best offensive performances always came with BABIP luck. And I remember that first half, it was that first half of whatever season, and people were like, I told you, if you just give Albert Elmore a chance, he'll hit. And I was like, oof, this is not going to work. Like, every single hit are bleeders through the infield. Like, I should say one out of every three hits, right? Like, once those bleeders through the infield start going and these little bloop singles like get caught, this is going to go south quickly. And it did, because or he needed to change who he was. And there were times in, I mean, we're going way south here, but there were times in spring training where he looked like he'd completely changed his approach. But that's really hard to really keep that consistent and bring that into a season and stick with it. And he just couldn't. So I don't want to rip the guy, because good dude and worked hard, but just didn't have the offensive skill set that works in this type of environment anymore. Which is to say, like, Pico Armstrong has already made those types of adjustments. He's changed his game. He's always been an elite performer. Similarly to Elmora, at a very young age, he was playing with the highest, at the highest level. And he's, when I say that, I mean like Team USA type stuff. And like, he's always been on the radar, so he can hit. And I guess my getting back to the point, it's like there's no reason not to create this elite middle infield defense. And I mean, we've run really long here, but I kind of want to touch on this still. I'm curious what you think, and I think I've read some stuff on what you've written, and I think I know how you feel, but what if Nick Madrigal continues to hit like this, but even better, right? He starts finding gaps, because this is the player that he's always been, right? What he's showing us lately, he puts the bat on the ball. He'll hit for average. I think he's going to start finding some gaps and stuff like that. I think it was unfair, and I jumped on the wagon too, because I was like, it's not worth giving him a chance anymore. And then I looked back, and he made the point to me when I was talking to him in St. Louis before the trade deadline, like, it's 30-something games that he's played, and I came off a major injury. He didn't actually say that. I'm adding that. But he was pointing out, it's like, it was a bad month. Everybody has a bad month. And I was like, yeah, you've hit your entire career, every level, high school, college, minors, even in the majors with the White Sox. I mean, maybe we all jumped off the bandwagon too quickly. Maybe we were too unfair to him. He was a mess, clearly, but it just doesn't seem like it was fair to just completely dismiss him as a piece. And if that's the case, if we're wrong, right? If he has a really good month and a half here, hits 350, what is it? Just like, okay, even more options? Or what's your thought here as far as how the Cubs attack the offseason and getting a shortstop, all these things that we're talking about that you and I feel strongly about, and other fans are like, no, we love Nico.
Yeah, I could see where you were going with a lot of that. And I wanted to get into some Madrigal stuff. Also because of the conversation we were having about the shortstops, because it's all intertwined. And maybe I'll start there in the response that I don't think there is anything that can happen between now and the end of the season, realistically, that would leave me in October and November saying, you know what? Never mind. Don't go after one of the top shortstops, because you have to leave Madrigal locked down at second base. And, you know, Nico isn't going to, you're not going to displace him that much by bringing in someone else. Like, I just don't, that doesn't feel realistic to me. And I'm not sure it would have been realistic even if Madrigal had been healthy all year and performing. I don't know. And that's kind of the way I would respond to the overall question, which is that Nick Madrigal has hit at every level. Yes. He's done it in a very unique way. Yes. A way that, unless you are an 80 grade extreme version of this contact player, cannot succeed in the modern big leagues. But maybe he is. Maybe he is just such a line drive, constantly spraying hitter that, you know, even without the power, defenses just can't cheat on him. Pitchers cannot strike him out. He takes enough walk, has enough discipline to take enough walks that, you know, he'll always have a 330 BABIP that will translate to a 310 average. And, you know, he's getting on base at a 360, 370 clip. And it's like, okay, I mean, that's a valuable player. I think for me, the questions and why I don't think I ever jumped on his struggles this year. It was more of just, okay, well, these are the concerns. You know, the concerns are he has to do all that stuff I just said to be useful at all. And because he was coming off a major injury and because he'd had relatively little big league experience, I was questioning, have we really seen him be the guy he is yet? Or have we just seen a very fortunate version so far? Because don't forget, and I'm not comparing the players, but like early Albert Almora had a lot of success too, you know, in little stub parts of his big league career. And we could look at it and be like, you know, I'm not actually sure this is going to play over time. And I just have always had some of those same kinds of concerns about Madrigal's style. That said, I was very optimistic about the acquisition because I like the idea of having this absurd contact guy in the lineup. He was striking out a lot earlier this year. That was a concern too. Like, he was striking out a lot more than he ever had. So anyway, that's a roundabout way of saying I cannot realistically foresee a version of events of over the last month and a half where I say, never mind. Don't leave yourself flexible in the infield. Just say that this is your position, this is yours, yada, yada. I do think, though, he could perform well enough that matches his earlier career performance that leaves you feeling like, okay, you know, he's 25. This probably is who he is. And this is a guy who has a lot of value in your lineup, 500 plate appearances a year. We got to figure out how to do that while coordinating it with Horner and not sitting out the best bats in the offseason. It does feel like the best version of these events is the classic, I don't know, get the good players and figure it out later. And that might be where I land, because the Cubs are going to have money to spend. They're going to need to add offense. And the infield is where it's likely to make the most sense. So you're right. The question is more right than the answer right now. It's just, let's see what happens the next month and a half, because he has started hitting a bit. He has looked better. But I just don't want the Cubs to put themselves in a situation where they're like, well, we've got two
ourselves in stone. Yeah, yeah. Let's set this in stone. I agree. Don't set it in stone. I think it's one of those good problems, right? Good problem to have if he performs. Because, I mean, he just looks more comfortable at the plate. It looks, I know some of it, and some of them are even some of those grounders that just get through. But they're hit harder than, I mean, pre this most recent IL stint, like some of these hits were dribblers in the infield that's like, he's not even making real contact. Like, what is going on? And that really got me concerned, where I was like, is this guy just like in a mental spiral now too? Like, because this is not the player he was. Like, he's not even looking like the he's completely thrown everything off and nothing looks right. So I started to get concerned that maybe this isn't going to work. And it was unfair. It was, I think when it looks that bad, it's easier to get down on someone quickly, that quickly.
Well, wait,
right?
You weren't being unfair. You were just concerned at the extreme level of the poor contact.
Yeah.
Like, and it was very extreme.
It was, yes. And I mean, I think I wrote about this, but some of the numbers were just jarring at how bad the contact quality was, and it was all on the ground. And yeah, he's going to probably be higher than normal for ground ball rate, but the quality of contact should be much better, and there will be some line drives. I believe, I think what I needed to see was a little more confidence at the plate and just a little more semblance of this guy knows how to hit, right? He just knows how to hit, and he'll figure it out. I feel like I'm starting to see that, and that gives me a little more, you know, a little more confidence that, okay, maybe a corner can be turned here. Build that confidence, remind us who you were, why you were drafted where you were, right? It's not Lol White Sox drafting this guy top 10. There's a real player here. And to the people that say that, I've talked to people who work for pretty great organizations that loved Nick Madrigal at that spot in that same area. I mean, really smart organizations that do everything well were fans of Nick Madrigal. Some of them have jumped off. Some of them are not fans right now. But I guess that's what happens when you see what we saw early this season. I'm curious to, like, I think it's a great problem to have if he turns a corner, if Franmil Reyes is performing and Wisdom is what he's been, right? Suddenly you have this infield where it's like, okay, What do you want to do with it? Infield / DH of what do you want to do with these guys? How do you figure this out? And if they all perform well enough over the next month and a half, I think at least one of them won't be with the team next year is my feeling. And I'd be shocked if they move Nico. I don't know how much was said it on the podcast, but this is the type of guy that you don't build your team around him in the sense that he's the centerpiece of the offense or something, but you build your team around him in the sense that this is the guy that's going to lead you guys onto the field every day. And he's the guy that everyone emulates because he shows up so damn early to work out. He puts in the type of work that, you know, actionable work, not just like going through the motions, but this is how you better yourself on a daily basis. And I know this is so cliche, but he really gets it. He just does. This is a true baseball player that fans should just like be thrilled. You want to be excited. You thought you loved Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo because they were like, Anthony Rizzo was the face of the organization. Nico Horner is the type of guy that fans should just love. If they don't love him, I'm not sure what they're watching, but that's the type of guy that when this team starts winning again, it's going like, this is the type of guy that like, he deserves to win. He puts in all the work that leads to winning. He understands all the little things. He understands like why it's important to win right now in a season that's lost. And I think that that's really valuable. And he's so young, but seems to really get all those things that take many, many years for certain ball players to get. So I think you keep him, but what happens with the other guys, I think it'll be interesting. And I think there's a way that you can leverage success over the final month and a half into really creating a not like this dominant force in 2023, but this team that's primed to kind of take a leap in 2023.
And because the Cubs did not play service time games with Nico Horner, he is arbitration eligible after the season and controlled for only those three arbitration years after this year. So all the more reason, just saying, to, well, lock him up. That would be nice. But
I was told they played games last year.
Yeah, I remember. That's what I was told. I remember those conversations, and I remember saying that is not what's happening here. I remember with great frustration saying that, and it turns out, lo and behold, he's done pretty well for himself in terms of service time. So, and I say, God bless. Go get paid. Be nice if the Cubs could
And one other thing, I think he's also, my big concern was having two guys similar like Nico and Madrigal in the lineup. I think Nico separated himself enough with the power that he has. He's not going to hit 20, 25 homers, but I think he could get to double digits and maybe even a little bit more, you know, into the 10, 15 range if he has a really good season. That's probably one of his better power output seasons, but he has more power than I think he was indicated with previous seasons where he didn't hit a homer since like 2019, right? Prior to this year.
Yeah, his launch angle has improved dramatically.
He hits the ball hard. He's always done that.
Yeah, he's always hit the ball hard, but I think in that 2019 season, after he made that brief debut and flashed some great stuff, and then we got that first longer look, I'm pretty sure his ground ball rate went crazy, and it was like, uh-oh, that's not good. But yeah, he has clearly turned that around, and even when the homers aren't there, he's got tons of gap power, and you wouldn't put them in the same category of hitter at this point. All right, man. See, Mooney's gone, and then we just go wild.
Just ramble.
This is what we do. It's Ont Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can read my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Sahadev Sharma. Get his at The Athletic. And the Cubs are in Washington this week and then Baltimore. It's basically all Washington, right? I mean, they're all the same area. Come on, I watched The Wire. So the Cubs, the Orioles are like 4 games over 500, by the way. So I think they're clinging to that last wild card spot in the East. And we'll be talking to you on Thursday. So you all take care, have a good week, and see you soon.